This is Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. Hey, friends, welcome back. You have episode 109 here, and I am talking to just a little old someone called Nicole Nordeman. You ever heard of her?
Yeah, me too.
She has a new album out, and some people can just do everything. She also has a new book out.
What?
And I love the song, also called Slow Down, that goes with the book. It's just the cry of every mom's heart, that tension of grow up and slow down. Her song and the video just capture the sweetness of kiddos so well. I cried pretty substantially. So anyhow, I really appreciate in this chat, Nicole talks about some really hard places that she's been. And I gotta be honest, she was a lot more real and transparent than I guess I assumed a famous person would be. So my bad for thinking she wasn't gonna be that honest, but she was an absolute delight. I just like her so much. So we are gonna get started with that in just a second. Before we start, though, I want to thank this week's sponsor, Anchored Press. Anchored Press is a Christian planner that keeps you focused on God as you organize your day. As moms, we spend so much time meeting the needs of others, and sometimes we end up neglecting our own souls. This planner helps us do both things. My friend Deanna has created a gorgeous resource to keep all the things together. Your times with the Lord, your plans, your goals, your go-to dinners. Your biggest problem is going to be choosing which one you want. So go to anchoredpress.com and get your 2018 planner today. All right, guys, it's time to get started on my chat with Nicole Nordeman. Hi, Nicole. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm so good. So what does like a regular day look like for someone such as yourself?
Well, so when I'm home, like I'm really home.
Okay.
I'm kind of an introverted person and I'm a homebody. So if I'm not having to get on an airplane or a tour bus, it's hard to get me to leave the house.
Okay.
I'm still in the same wonderful outfit that I went to sleep in. So
that's
just
great.
Picture excellent sweats, no okay. Showering and coffee. And that's kind of that's my jam most days when I'm home.
Okay. So I did want to ask about that. I saw in your book, it said you're an introvert, like a raging introvert, which I thought was awesome. And that you're one of your kiddos is too, right?
Yes.
So that and being a performer, how does that work?
You know, the actual performing part of my life in terms of like singing from a stage or singing behind a piano, like that comes naturally to me, I think, just because it's sort of a second language that I've always spoken. It's just is performance. But the challenging part as an introvert is all of the interaction before and after that, like all of the chit chat and the millions of new friends and all the activity that comes with before and after a performance, I think is what's draining for me personally.
Absolutely. I get that. First of all, I've loved your music for ages. I think when I first became a Christian, I listened to all of your music all the time. So that was really helpful for me to kind of flesh out, what does it look like to follow Christ? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So thank you for that. And I cried like just a baby when I first heard the song Slow Down and watched the video. Oh my gosh. That really hit it on the head. All the ages.
Yeah, all the ages. That's right. And that song was kind of an accident, really. Like I was supposed to sing something for my son's 5th grade graduation. And I had kind of forgotten that I'd agreed to sing like the night before. I was trying to figure out, like, first of all, what could I possibly sing to middle schoolers without being so lame? You know, like what am I going to say to these
kids? They think everything's embarrassing.
Everything's lame. And so having that anxiety, but then also like, it just kind of hit me. I was at my piano practicing and I thought, oh my gosh, this is a serious moment. Like I'm launching a middle schooler and, you know, just all of the many, many, many stages and ages of memories just kind of sort of washed over me. So I'm having a meltdown over, you know, photo albums and all of the pictures of the first missing tooth and the first walking and the first word. And I don't know, this song just kind of poured out of me. And then I ended up singing it the next morning at the ceremony. So that's sort of the genesis of the song. And then the video followed, of course.
Did you know the people in the video? Because they all...
Yes, most of them. That is such like a sweet thing to me because, you know, we had like almost no budget and it was just kind of, we asked some friends to send in pictures of their kiddos. And, but then also my son, who's 14 now, is, he's just really great with like cameras and recording stuff. Like he's real creative that way. So we just kind of took our video camera and just went around town and asked our friends if we could just drop in on their houses and just film their kids.
So your son filmed all that?
He's responsible for a lot of that footage. So every night on stage, when I sing it and I play the video at the same time, it's just so dear to me because I'm literally looking at people that I love and children that I love that have been a part of our lives for a long time.
That is so meaningful.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So I do have a question though about being on stage. I cry when I'm like speaking and because I just get touched by all the things, right? And I actually grew up singing, but would I eventually stopped getting the solos because I'd get so touched by the words about God and that they were like, oh, that's awkward. Why is that third grader crying? And so is it hard for you to not like get choked up? And what do you do if you do?
Yeah, I mean, I have to just kind of go to a happy place during that song because my kids are in that video too, of course. So I'm looking at images of them flashing across the screen. And, you know, some nights are better than others. If I've been gone for a long time or I've, you know, had an especially long traveling run and I haven't seen them, then I just have to go to a different place mentally to sing it or I wouldn't get through the first line.
Yeah. Okay. I need to find that other mental place because I don't always find it. Okay. So I just wanted to talk about your book, by the way, is gorgeous. I love that it's beautiful. The pictures are great, but so practical, very funny. You have stuff from all your other friends who we all know because they're also very well-known artists. And it was an easy read, but it was very thought-provoking. I love that there's places to write down things, really good questions. So well done for your first book, singer.
Thank you so much. And you know what? I can take zero credit for any loveliness because that is, as you know, like that's just all team of really beautiful, creative people coming up with wonderful ways to make the book look as special as it does. So
yeah,
I wrote the words, but the rest I cannot take any design credit for at all.
Well, I love though, it's like a gift book / workbook / regular book. I don't know. It's a really neat combination.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm definitely excited about it. Proud of it. Proud to work with people that had a vision for it long before I did. And I don't know. It feels really nice just to have a little offering to the world that's not necessarily music.
Yeah. Did you ever think you would write a book?
You know, I wrote a book several years ago. I was part of this project called Music Inspired by the Story, which was like, essentially, me and another guy wrote like 19 songs kind of from the perspective of these iconic men and women in scripture that we've grown learning about. So it was like this Moses song and David song and Esther song. And it was like this huge undertaking. And then I wrote kind of a companion piece to it about these characters. So that was my first foray into book writing. But I think this one, years later, just feels a lot more like me and a lot more personal, too.
Yeah. Okay. So in the book, there was a lot of really important things I wanted to pull out because I know my listeners who, not all of them, are moms who stay home and have husbands. And so what I really appreciated about this was you're a working mom and a busy one at that. Like you said, you sometimes are gone for a long period of time. But on top of that, you're now a single mom where you didn't used to be. So you've gone from, you said you took 10 years off of music.
Yep.
And you were a stay-at-home mom. So you've done the one, and then I'm sure not hoping to, ended up being the other of all of, you know, the other end of the spectrum. So talk about, please, that transition, and what would you say to a mom who's like, this isn't where I thought I'd end up?
Yeah. My story is interesting in that, I guess this is everybody's story. Like, it's never how you think it's going to be. It's never what you planned. And so I think there are probably stay-at-home moms who thought they would be working moms and vice versa, and single moms who didn't think they'd be single moms. Like, so I think if anything, at this point in my life, in my mid-40s, like I'm just learning the wisdom and holding life with a much more open hand. Like I just, the more ideas concretely that I had about how my life was going to look at this point, you know, the more I held on to those, just the harder it was to let those go. So as it relates to being a mom and working or not working inside, outside the home, you know, I think there are still some very universal struggles that we all have. Like everybody struggles to find balance. Everybody struggles to prioritize in a way that's practical. Mm-hmm. Everybody struggles with the ridiculous comparison game and suffering under other people's Instagram filters and Pinterest. And, you know, like all that stuff, that's all of us. no matter if you drive to work or if you're still in your robe at the end of the day. So I think just kind of trying to speak to moms in general of all ages and stages, married, divorced, tiny littles, or just launching kids into college. Like, there's just still some really universal stuff that we all are working through forever. You're just never done being a mom.
Well, and I think the lie is that the other group has it together and you're kind of left behind.
Yes. In fact, I really experienced that when I did come off the road, kind of at the height of my career, truthfully, and I decided to not just like slow down a little bit, but like really hit the brakes and be a full-time mom and totally take my artist hat off.
Yeah.
The amount of affirmation that I received, because people assumed, and I let them for a time, that my decision was so selfless because it was all about staying home with my babies. And the truth is, I was coming off the road to try to save my marriage as well, which was incredibly broken. So that was very interesting to me to get this like big super hug, mostly from the church, about how sacrificial it was that I was going to stay at home and not work, you know. And I thought, wow, that feels unfair to all of my working mom friends, and having just been a working mom too. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's some weird dynamics there that if you are at home, you are somehow making the more noble, selfless choice. And I don't think that's super fair.
Well, and I think, I mean, first of all, for the women who, they don't have a choice. Like, there's... Right. Yeah. Or the women, and there's so many women, and I was one of them, which is why I even started this show. I was a stay-at-home mom, but man, if my heart was not at home, I was home because, like you said, that it has a lot of accolades that go with it, because people assume that you're really in it to win it. But there is a very real way to be a stay-at-home mom and be as far away from home in your mind and your heart as possible.
Yeah, very true. And I think too, like, there needs to be a safe space for women who say, I love being a mom. I am so thankful for the gift that these children bring to my life, and I want to steward it well, as beautifully as I can. And also, I'm gifted in other areas, and I am energized by the workplace. I'm a better mom because my brain is engaged in different ways all day long, doing different things. And I think there needs to be space for all of it.
Yeah. And I think, like what you said earlier, is when I'm home, I'm all the way home. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need to do, is wherever we are, be all the way there.
That's good.
Because then you really can be a super great mom when you're there. So what does it look like then to be a single mom that, okay, I don't know the timeline, but did you start going back to music again once you were divorced because you had to, or did you just kind of come to this place where you're like, I think I can do both and God won't be mad?
Yeah, a little bit of both. So I just wasn't sure. I think a lot of this had to do with just my own feelings of brokenness and failure around my marriage. I wasn't sure that I would return to music or that there would be grace for that. I was just having grown up in the church and having experienced or seen kind of from afar some of the judgment that can then be there.
I remember when Amy Grant got divorced, it was like, no.
Like, right. And I knew that my story wouldn't be a fraction of that attention because A, divorce is just so much more common now, sadly. Yeah. But also, I just thought, I didn't know that I would wanted to. I didn't know that God would give me songs to sing again. I didn't know that if I would lose all credibility with people who had written me letters and said, you're such a role model for my daughter, or your music really helped save my marriage. Like, all those things just felt so utterly shameful to me that I thought, I might just have to find a new line of work. I don't know. I have no skill set, so I'm not sure what I would have done. But I didn't know that music would be part of the future. And I really was so grateful when I really felt like just God stirring in my heart. I have things to say to you, like, from this place of pain.
Yes.
I have places to take this music that you could not have taken them without this pain.
Absolutely.
And people that need to hear it that wouldn't have been able to hear anything else. So
exactly. So you get credibility with a whole new group.
Yes.
That you never wanted to be credible with. Like, this
That's
never
right.
your goal.
Nobody wants to be a member of that club, but the number of people, women in particular, who have sought me out now to say, I've walked that road. I know that pain. Thank you for your voice and for just being transparent or whatever. Like, that's deeply humbling.
It is. It's a whole nother level of blessing. I know when I got married and divorced 4 months later when I was really young, and it was a kind of a life or death thing. Like, God hates divorce. He totally does. But he also hates when like a husband kills his wife. So I knew that that was also true. So I went ahead and got the heck out of there. But yeah. There was still so much shame and so much pain. Then I got married, you know, several years later to a really godly man. Love him so much. Still married to him. But he wanted to go serve overseas and share the Lord with people. And I was like, well, I'll go because you want to go. But he's not going to use me anymore because of that whole divorce thing.
Right.
But God was so sweet. And I was able to build a relationship with a girl. And actually, she accepted Christ. I was able to lead my first person I ever, like, kind of led to the Lord on the day of my divorce. And it was the anniversary. And I was just like, Lord, that is God being so sweet and saying, I restore. I don't cast things aside. I restore. So I love that he's done that with your story. And I think that that's such a testimony to other women who they find themselves in a situation they didn't mean to be, but their whole life. I remember thinking if my life had like a vision of like train tracks at the divorce, the tracks just like stopped. Like there were no more tracks. Like there's nothing past this.
Right.
And that's just not true. It's a lie. So
true. And it's so easy to have grace for other people's lives, but not ourselves. Like you never would have said that to a friend of yours. Your train tracks stop here. Like, no, of course not. God's going to redeem this and God's going to use this. And all the things that we speak out of such love and compassion for other people, but not for ourselves. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, again, just in this stage of my life, something that I'm really just discovering for the first time is the power of self-compassion and self-care and to learn to see yourself the way your creator sees you. That's really huge.
It changes everything.
It does.
To think about what are his eyes towards you? What do they look like?
Yes.
They're not disappointed. They're not angry.
And we don't have to look far to imagine what that posture looks like because of how we feel about our own children. Like, you know, what would you say to any of your kids who came home with a failed marriage or addiction or abortion or anything that seems unforgivable or unthinkable? You open your arms. They're your children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing they could do. And that is exactly the posture of God the Father toward us, is just open arms.
Yeah. What would you like a mom with a great marriage, never been divorced, what do you need them to know about a divorced mom who is a Christ follower?
You know, I think what I would say is that we really need each other. I think women really need to be in relationship with other women who don't have the same story. And I think that a lot of times when we surround ourselves with people that just sort of mirror our own life experiences, then our worlds get really small and we don't know how to interact with tough questions, tough issues. I guess I would say, and I would have said this to myself 10 years ago, like seek out people who are on different places on the journey.
Mm-hmm.
Ask questions about that. Try to understand the different ways that their faith has been shaped by their own road.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just goes a long way in helping us really see each other and be vulnerable with one another, which is such a gift that women bring to the table.
Absolutely. I love it. In that time when you went off tour, I don't know, off the grid, I don't know how a good way to say that. You probably were not entirely off the grid. What has, like, kind of being famous, I'm sure you probably don't like calling it that. What would you call it?
I don't know. Okay. Yeah, who knows? It's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. What has that taught you about contentment and what really matters? Because I think the rest of us who are not that think, oh man, that'd be so amazing. So what have you learned?
Well, I've learned first to really have to do a lot of work in the sort of people-pleasing department.
Okay.
And I have just been a serious people pleaser since I was a little girl. Like I've always, wait, long before I did this, but I have always just deeply cared far too much about other people's opinions and sort of analysis of my life. And so, yes, becoming someone in the spotlight did nothing to help that, as you can imagine. Like it really, contentment for me was like, how well am I loved by my peers, by my record sales, by, you know, my management team? Like how is my performance doing? And then I'll tell you how content I am.
Yeah.
So it's been a long journey to really just divorce myself from that. And I won't tell you that I've arrived by any means. I still really recognize that itch to make everybody happy constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And when I identify it, I have to really do hard soul work, not to let that dictate how happy I am or where I find my joy or contentment. So it's, you know, like anybody, it's a struggle. It's a daily thing that I have to just put back up on the altar. And then when God's not watching, I sneak in and take back off the altar.
Yeah. So what was that like then to just stop it all?
You know, it wasn't as hard as you'd think because I was so miserable. I was, okay. It was literally the morning after I'd been to the Dove Awards ceremony and walked away with a bunch of little statues. I had coffee with my manager, and to his utter shock and dismay, I said, I'm done. Like, I'm really done. Not in a month. Like, I'm done today.
How did you know it wasn't just you needed a month off?
Because I had never experienced that kind of brokenness, and things in my marriage were so awful. And I had, you know, Charlie was like 1 year old at the time. And I don't know. I thought there's something so wrong with being at the height of your success in ministry and vocation and being this dark and this depressed and this broken. Like, there's no way these two things should be happening at the same time. That's just, yeah. I just can't live like this anymore. So I didn't know if it would be a year. I didn't know if it'd be 5 years. It turned to be 10 years.
Yeah. What contributed to that darkness, do you think?
I think just being somebody that I'm not for, again, just trying to make people happy from a stage, in an interview, at a church, in a marriage. You know, my life had become so tiring because it's tiring to pretend. Yeah. And I was exhausted from trying to maintain this facade where everybody thought it looked awesome from the curb, but I know it's like imploding inside.
So you stop the thing out of like obedience and desperation, really. You know what I mean? Like, I cannot go on this way. But here you are today, the marriage didn't get saved. So for a woman who's like, I did everything. Like it says in the Bible, ask and you will receive. Like, I cannot tell you how many times I begged that my marriage wouldn't end in divorce.
Yep.
How do you reconcile that? How would you encourage somebody who's in that situation?
You know, I am really comfortable for the first time in my life just saying, I don't know. I don't know why it wasn't healed. I don't know why yours wasn't healed. I don't know why, after so much prayer and tears and pleading and counseling, you know, why I didn't get the happy ending. I just firmly believe that there is somewhere in the middle of all this, a reason. And I think, like we were talking earlier about, like, some of the opportunities that I have to speak to women now that I couldn't have with any credibility spoken to before. Mm-hmm. Ministry opportunities to speak into people's lives who are in a lot of pain. I didn't have any context for real pain at that point.
Yeah.
So I know that's one of the redeeming things that God has done through this story. I would not have been at home for 10 solid years for my little babies, which I wouldn't have traded for the world. You know, mm-hmm. I got to be there for all of their first moments, and I'm so thankful for that. So that was a beautiful thing that came out of that decision to get off the road. But the truth is, I don't know. I don't think I'll know this side of heaven. Like, why? Mm-hmm. Why it wasn't restored, why it wasn't redeemed, and just have to trust that there are bigger things at work.
Yeah. And that redemption, it just doesn't look like we think. We think, you know, redemption is the marriage is saved, but redemption is other things. Like, in my story, because it was a very abusive situation, in sharing my story, God has gotten women the courage to gather up their little babies and get them out of an abusive marriage because of my story. And so that, I think that counts.
And look at your platform now. Like, you're speaking to women who are hearing your voice now, and that you'll never meet them in person, but that is their story secretly. And that, you just can't quantify how important that is.
Yeah. I mean, it's restoration, right? It's restoration for them, but my marriage wasn't restored, but there's still restoration happening. So I just think we need to think outside the box, because God sure does, about what does restoration look like.
Right.
We've all seen those mouthwatering smoothies on Instagram and thought, yep, that is what I should be eating, but who has time to make that every day? Wouldn't it be great if we could get all those picture-perfect nutrients without having to hit the farmer's market and chop up a million fruits and veggies? Listen, now you can get your superfoods super fast with Daily Harvest. Daily Harvest sends all that superfood straight to your door with your choice of smoothies, activated breakfast bowls, or quote-unquote nice cream. Have you heard of that? That is ice cream for vegans. Each single-serving cup comes ready to blend or heat. Cups are stored in the freezer, so they're ready whenever you are. The produce is all organic, all unrefined, and it looks just as amazing as it tastes. You can actually see all of the whole ingredients when you open up the cup. Daily Harvest freezes their ingredients when it's fresh, which seals in the nutritional value. Preparing your cup is incredibly easy. You just have to add water, or if you're feeling super fancy, you can put in other liquids like coconut or almond milk. Either way, your Daily Harvest Cup is ready in just 30 seconds. So you can eat right, right now. Go to daily-harvest.com and enter promo code MSW to get 3 items free off your first box. That's promo code MSW for 3 free Daily Harvest Cups at daily-harvest.com. That's daily-harvest.com. So I loved what you said, like just to say, I don't know, and be okay with that, because we do want to have all the answers. And in the book, I loved when you talked about that in regards to parenting. Just get used to doing the clueless shrug, you called it. I love it. Yeah. And confess that you don't know. And then you said, you went on to say that important conversations start at the end of sentences that don't end with decisive periods.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was so good, because we feel like we're the parents. We should know. We know that we don't know, but we sure think they need to think we know.
Right. And I think that somewhere along the line, we sort of bought this notion that moms and dads are sort of omniscient in that way, and that they have the answers, and it's our job to instruct, and it's our job to teach and to shape, and all of that's true. But I think at a certain age, your kids can kind of smell a fraudulent answer a mile away, at least mine can.
Yeah.
So when I'm trying to sort of neatly explain a difficult question, a nuanced, layered question about theology or about racism or about sexuality, like, I just have to force myself not to go into auto mode where this is the mom answer and this is the Bible verse that supports the mom answer. Like, otherwise your kids don't think that you will, as they age, will be a trustworthy person to bring hard stuff to.
Yeah.
If you always have the nice, neat, tidy answer, and some of these questions don't have nice, neat, tidy answers, but if you always are offering one, then I think your kids eventually will just kind of not choose to bring hard stuff to the table. And I never want that.
Yeah. The dialogue makes us very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But it's where really great things happen.
Yes. Absolutely.
So you said somewhere, I don't know who you said did it, but that like on a Friday, they would have pizza and they would have a no shame zone where you could ask whatever you wanted.
Yes. My next door neighbors, we've since moved. This is an older neighborhood, but they had 3 like preteen boys. Like they were all in middle school at the same time. And these are, you know, really godly people, like just very grounded in their faith and grounded in scripture. And they're raising these boys really well. But they had a thing every Friday night. I don't remember what it was called, but it was just like basically everything's on the table on Friday night.
Yeah, I think it was called Ask Anything Night.
Yeah, something like that. And that was just their standing deal. We order pizza and the boys get to ask anything, no matter how embarrassing or how cringeworthy, that, you know, maybe they've heard something, some locker room talk at school or have a question. At that particular season, a lot of it was about sex and girls, and nobody's going to get in trouble for wondering. Nobody's going to get shamed for the topic. It basically is like, let's have it.
Yeah.
And, you know, she said the stuff that would come up was just like, she wanted to crawl in a hole. I can't believe my kids are hearing about this in middle school.
Mm.
But the idea is they're coming to us for the answers and for the conversation and not to their peers.
Yes.
Who, you know, are maybe not knowing themselves. So anyway, I thought that was really wise, just to create space where anything is okay to ask.
Yeah. I love, and then there's pizza there. So of course everybody's in a good mood. We have carbohydrates.
You're right. It's like a big serious sit down in the family room talk, you know.
And it's happening ahead of time. It's not happening after someone comes home pregnant. You know what I mean? Like so it is. There's like very low stakes.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
And then that happens at other times of the day, too. Like, I'm sure that creating that norm makes Tuesday afternoons have those type of questions, too. And you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's so good. So healthy.
There's a part in the book, too, where I talk about my friend Paul, who inherited a teenage son. Actually, well, he was little when they got married, but he married a woman who already had a child, and their relationship has been a little bit awkward, just trying to figure out how to be a stepdad. He'd never had children before, and just kind of the dynamic there was new.
Mm-hmm.
But as his stepson was getting, again, at that age where the questions become more serious and the content becomes more serious, he had this great idea about like building a little bonfire in their backyard. They had like a little fire pit. And he said, whenever there was a hard thing to talk about, Nathan and I would go out there and just build a fire together, because it allowed us to do an activity that wasn't sitting on the couch, look at my eyes, answer my questions. But it's like, you have to get the wood and you have to get this and you have to check the wind direction, and like we're doing something and we can talk about things without having to really have like this serious, intimidating conversation moment. We're just two guys building a fire. And he said some of the most important conversations we've ever had have just been chopping wood and building a fire, because that allows him the freedom to just be himself a little bit more. Yeah. That was good.
It really is. And you said like they have so much pressure in their lives anyway. If we're another source of pressure,
right?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't like to think of myself as a source of pressure, but I put the pressure on pretty good.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Because we want to know. So there's lots of questions.
I find that my daughter is a little bit more like a guy in that we have great conversations driving in the car when we're not looking at each other.
Yeah, everybody's got their own ring of fire. You know, for me with Charlie a couple years ago, it was, you know, shooting hoops in the driveway. And I'm so not an athletic person. I barely make a basket. But that's where he wanted to talk. So I had to just, you know, suffer through a lot of free throws to have conversations about hard stuff.
Isn't that funny? Gosh. Nobody says parenting is going to be so awkward.
Oh, it's so awkward. I know. And everyone keeps telling me, women who are further down the road than I am, like, it doesn't get better. I mean, awkwardness, like, just it gets harder. You trade physical exhaustion for emotional exhaustion, I think, in a lot of cases.
Totally. Gosh. Yes. Okay. So single mom of teenage boy.
Yes.
Talk about that.
You know, my friend Jen Hatmaker just sent her firstborn to college. And so sort of during his senior year, she would post a lot about him and how much she's going to miss him. And her kind of writing about teenage life has just been very encouraging to me, because I think we are sold this bill of goods that it's going to be awful. Mm-hmm. Like just get ready for the teenage years and the door slamming and the yelling and the disrespect and, you know, and she was just like, they're the best years ever. Like, it doesn't have to be that. And children are going to go through difficult things. And I'm sure her children have too, but she's like, I think it's been the most fun. I love this age. I love their friends. I miss him so terribly now that he's at school. And so I'm kind of clinging to that. Like, we have not had anything really difficult to walk through yet, but I'm not going to live like expecting one either. Like, I'm just not going to wait for the ball to drop where we suddenly enter the darkness of the teenage years. It could be really wonderful. And I'm just going to claim that.
Yeah. How do you, or do you feel the need to kind of get men? I don't know how involved your ex-husband is, but what do you do to make sure your son has guys? Because you can do everything you can do, but you're still not a guy.
That's right. Well, he is very involved. We have shared custody, and so he is with them, you know, 50% of the time. So I know he gets some of that instruction just in terms of like masculinity and just guy stuff, like you said, stuff that no matter how close I am with Charlie, that he's not going to want to talk about with me. Mm-hmm. But I also I'm dating a wonderful man after years and years of thinking that I never would. And so that relationship has been deeply healing for Charlie. And he was a youth pastor for many years. So he really gets the age group.
Great.
He's just been such a gift on so many levels, but in particular for Charlie, who I think has a little bit of trust issues around men. So that's been wonderful. And also just, you know, the whole, it takes a village thing. It's really true. It's true for, maybe especially true for single parents, because a lot of my friends' husbands have engaged with Charlie and stepped in, and their coaches and their teachers, and, you know, just, I think probably have poured into him a little bit more than normal, just so that he does get just healthy interaction with men.
Yeah, I think because probably the shame associated with divorce in the Christian communities or the Christian subculture, I think that forces single moms kind of into hiding a little bit. And so they isolate.
Yep.
So I'm just really glad that you're not doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. The first couple of years were very awkward because I, you know, do have some name recognition, first of all, and we live in a small town.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, and we go to a Christian school. So like all of that plus divorce was really awkward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most of my kids' friends have mom and dad married at home, traditional, conservative, like, you know, all of it. Mm-hmm. So I did absolutely isolate. There was no doubt about it. I was deeply depressed for the first couple of years.
Well, and there's like a healing and a kind of a grieving process.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely feel like, hey, this is who we are. This is our story. God's doing amazing things in our lives, even with the D word in our past. And that's okay. And now people, I think, just see us as friends and people and not as, you know, oh, that's so sad, you know.
Oh, didn't you feel, I felt like I had like that giant scarlet D on my chest all the time.
Oh, such a thing.
Oh, terrible. So the whole book in general is, by the way, thanks for talking about all that hard, gross stuff.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. So the book in general, Slow Down, is so good, and we need to, and we know cognitively that we need to. And one of the things that you talk about is taking care of yourself. And I think, though, practically, it just feels selfish, and it sometimes just literally feels impossible because we have so much going on. So you talk about like small things to do and moments that remind you that you have a self apart from your role as a mom. I tell my kids, do you know that I'm actually a person? And they're like, you're actually a, you're a human being too? That's so crazy. But then I don't sometimes treat myself as a person. So I should sometimes say to myself, do you know you're a person, homegirl?
Right.
So as a very busy single mom, what helps you reconnect with the parts that you've ignored? Because that's a question you ask people in the book, but like, what has helped you?
I think it's in the really small moments because, you know, like you're saying, like, it's just not realistic to hit the spa for a day. Like, that's not happening. We know that's not happening.
Yeah.
You're working, I'm working, we're both parenting. Like, it's just self-care, I think, can happen in very tiny moments. And I do think, I mean, it's stupid stuff, even like, I'm going to listen to a song that I want to listen to in the car. Like, instead of who gets to be in charge of the music, I rarely get a vote in that because I don't ever ask for one. So it's stuff like that. Guys, we're going to listen to my music now, or we're going to stop at Starbucks because I need a latte. You know, like, I'm not very good about that. I feel like I grew up learning that the measure of your selflessness as a mom could be measured by your exhaustion. So if you are so depleted at the end of the day and you're the woman that everybody goes, oh, she just gives and gives, bless her heart.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a virtue when I was growing up. I don't want to pass that on. I don't want my daughter to think that that is a goal, is to be perpetually exhausted and not have a self left.
Yeah.
And I don't want my son to look for that in a wife either.
Right. My daughter sometimes like, I'm not having kids. This is way too hard. Like, and I'm like, well, that would be how I'm making it appear. Like, I make her never want to have offspring. That's so neat.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So I think just, I think it looks different for everybody. But I think, like you said, just even acknowledging to yourself in the mirror, like, I'm a person. I'm a person. I'm not a role. I'm not a title. Like, I'm not just a mom. I am lots of things. And just making small choices that kind of honor that.
Yeah, that's good. I like it. Because we do think, well, spa day, that's the only way to do it. But that's not the only way to do it.
Right. No one can really clear their day for a spa day. I'm sure somebody can, but it's not me.
Yeah, me either. Okay, so I like to end every interview with asking people, what is something that right now you can't stop talking about? Everybody wishes you would just say, you know, stop, because they've already heard you tell them about it.
Like, does it have to be like
anything
deep and
no, it could be your favorite new Starbucks drink.
So I watched this documentary I guess it's probably been over a month now, called What the Health.
Okay.
And it's like, there's been a lot of documentaries about, you know, where our food comes from and how it's processed and the meat industry and blah, blah, blah. But for whatever reason, and I've watched a lot of documentaries about this kind of stuff.
I on purpose don't, because then I don't know what to eat. So tell me, educate me.
I have become that person that, like, I haven't had any meat ever since I watched it, because it was that disturbing to me.
Okay, so it's about being a vegetarian, or?
It's about veganism, essentially. It's about eating a plant-based diet, essentially.
Okay.
So I'm so trying not to be that person, like this.
Hey, if that's the person you are.
Nobody wants to be around that person at all, trust me. So my kids are like, oh, yay, vegetables all day long. That is awesome. I'm trying to be like balanced about it and, you know, not being obnoxious, but that really is something that I'm talking a lot about and thinking a lot about. And I really feel different and better. I feel so much better.
Really? Like how? Like less tired or bloated or what?
All of it. Like I just feel lots of energy, sleeping really well, losing weight, like just all of the things that they claim that you will experience when you're mostly eating fruits and vegetables is how I feel. So
okay, so what was the kind of getting there like? Were you really angry? I feel like I'd be really mad. Like transitioning from...
You know what? I decided not to just like go super extreme. Like I'm just going to eliminate red meat this week. Okay. That wasn't that hard. And now I'm going to eliminate chicken. Okay. That was definitely not that hard. Like the hard things for me have been like cheese because, you know, cheese.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've just been like, I'm finally at a place where I'm pretty much 100% plant-based, but getting there was harder than I thought it would be. But I do feel so good. So I think I'm going to keep doing it.
You're that person.
So
are your kids that person?
No, I'm not forcing them. We still frequent the Chick-fil-A all the time. And I still cook for them with some lean meat. But for the most part, yeah. I don't know if I'll ever like make it a family decision. Right now, it's just kind of my random diet. So I don't want to like project that onto everyone.
Right. Are you someone who does this? Do you like to pick different ways to eat?
Yes. And that's partly why I'm trying not to be obnoxious about it, because probably in 2 weeks, I'll be having a double cheeseburger. So I don't want to be like super disciple about it and then have to be embarrassed later.
Yes. Okay. So what was like the one thing that made you say, that is it? I didn't even know that. This changes everything for me.
You know, I think part of what the documentary talks about is how so many food and drug companies are like in bed with advertising. Mm. Like, I don't think I knew the underbelly of how all of that works in terms of the labels that we read on products and how like manipulative they are in terms of who's paying who to run which tests and studies and, you know, donating to this company to like, it's all so like that freaked me out. I was like, oh my gosh, we are just pawns. Like we're just buying yogurt because.
Isn't it terrible?
Yeah. I didn't realize a lot of that stuff. So that was interesting to me.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go watch it.
Yeah, you should. It's really fascinating.
Okay. Awesome. Well, Nicole, so fun to talk to you. You're like a regular person. Did you know that?
Hey, I loved this. I can't believe that we're done. Like that flew by.
It did. It sure did.
So fun. Thank you.
You're so welcome. And I'm coming to you're coming to Dallas.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's to see me. And I'm going to be at the concert. So just
look
for me in the crowd. Okay.
That is so great.
Give me a wave. I'll know what it means.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I'm so excited.
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah. So you have a great rest of your day. And thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Did you love that? I loved it. We recorded that weeks and weeks ago, and it's just still been on my mind and on my heart. Her willingness to be vulnerable and talk about things that, I don't know, I just feel like she with, you know, I mean, she's Nicole Norderman, for heaven's sake. She could say, yeah, we're not going there, but she did, and I'm thankful. And I know that it's going to bless you guys, the ones of you who are feeling just so much shame. This week, I was at the Declare conference, and I was talking to a friend, Jen, who just was divorced, and we were just talking about all the shame that you are under, and also feeling like, gosh, when people get divorced because they just are like, oh, well, you know, let's find a new partner, like we're square dancing or something. That is never something that I'm like, oh yeah, just get a different husband, it's no big deal. But there's a heart-wrenching fact is that if two people aren't in it, one person just can't be in it by themselves. Like if the other one won't or refuses to be safe, you know, there's just it's just hard. And I think people in general want to kind of gloss it over and say, well, I mean, you're a failure. Or even if other people don't give that to you at all, you certainly take it on. And so this weekend, as we were kind of processing through that and talking about what that's been like and what has God done, we did talk again, me and Jen, about the Scarlet D, feeling like it's just on you and everybody can see it. And then we walked out front, and I put this on Instagram, you may have seen the picture, but we walked out front to take our pictures because we were speakers and they wanted us to stand by the Declare sign, which were like these gigantic letters, tall as people. And her and I, without meaning to, we were just kind of talking and walking, and we ended up by the giant D after having just talked about feeling labeled with a D. But she said, look, it's white. And we just both had this moment of, wow, Lord, you are a God who restores. Do you like divorce? No. Do you wish that it's just something that we do willy-nilly? No. I know C.S. Lewis said that it's like an amputation, and it for reals is. Like, God doesn't want us to separate because it is so painful. But is anything too big for God to redeem and restore? Absolutely not. So anyway, just an encouragement for any of you who that is something that you need encouragement for. Statistically, it's something half of you need encouragement for. So what will your strategy be to struggle well this week? I loved how she said that the song Slow Down was an accident that just happened while she did her usual thing of practicing the piano and getting ready to perform. God works like that sometimes. Me starting this podcast was kind of an accidental thing I didn't mean to do, and he just kind of plopped it in my head. So I don't know. I think as we stay open and quiet inside and listen to what God is doing, we will have a lot more of those quote unquote accidents where we just kind of intersect with God's voice and find that he is creating something great. I think, though, that we would have a lot more if we were quieter in our spirits. So maybe that can be a strategy to struggle well, just to quiet yourself. She mentioned at one point that she wondered if God would ever give her songs again, or if she had lost credibility completely. I think it doesn't just need to be divorce that makes us feel disqualified. And so I would just like to encourage you that if you feel like God is never going to give you your quote unquote song, or that you're not credible, or that your train tracks have ended, that's not how God works. If God was done with you, you would be dead. And I'm very much assuming that if you're listening to this, you are not, in fact, dead. So God is a God who redeems and restores. So your story is not over. So just sit in that today if that resonates with you. If you have a story of restoration, I encourage you to tell someone about it, because they need to know the hope that you have. So maybe you do that this week. Maybe this week, if you are married with 2.5 children and a dog and you're living the American dream, maybe you can reach out to a mom who is a single mom, or a mom of a blended family, or someone who is a mom but all of her kiddos are not living. There's just ways to love women and moms who are not like us. So maybe you do that this week. I loved Nicole's reminder that when things look awesome, that doesn't mean they're actually awesome. She, for all intents and purposes, you know, has a life that the rest of us would be like, I wouldn't mind being beautiful and famous and talented. But she was just really falling apart on the inside. I think it's just an encouragement for me to actually see people and not just see what I think their lives must be like, but to actually see them and hear them and care for them where they're at, and not just kind of be blinded by or distracted by what they have that I wish I had. I loved her encouragement not to always have a nice, neat, tidy answer for your kids and their hard questions. So maybe this week you try to sit in the tension of the clueless shrug, I don't know, that's a great question. And then maybe go to God's word and kind of wrestle through those big questions with your kids instead of just saying, it's this, and I'm the mom, and I know everything. And then maybe finally your strategy to struggle well this week could be the Ask Anything night, where you get some pizza and your kids blow your ears off with their crazy questions that you did not even know they knew those words. But you're creating an open environment and letting them know your questions matter, what's going on in your life matters, you matter. I love that idea. All right, ladies, I hope that this blessed you as much as it blessed me. Share it with your friends who are struggling, who are divorced. Watch that video. It's going to make you cry like a baby. As always, please come find us at Mom Struggling Well on Facebook and Instagram. Ladies, there are a couple more of those custom Mom Struggling Well mugs from NS Pottery. You can find the link to that on my website, momstrugglingwell.com, or also on Instagram in the clickable link. You can get to it there. There's also Mom Struggling Well shirts and mason jar cups and the little mini blocks. So there's lots of really fun Mom Struggling Well swag that would support the show, but also be supporting moms who have small businesses. So you can find out all about that at momstrugglingwell.com. If you do shopping on Amazon, and you know you do, don't try to lie about it. Before you go there, go to momstrugglingwell.com/Amazon, and that will take you to Amazon, but using the Mom Struggling Well affiliate link. So the show gets some pennies based on your purchase, and it doesn't cost you anything. So go to momstrugglingwell.com/Amazon. Every time you buy something on Amazon, that would really help out the show. Alrighty, y'all. I pray for you on a regular basis. I'm so, so glad to have you guys in my life. Even though it's just messages on Instagram, I still appreciate you. It also warms my heart so much the way you encourage one another. Love it. Love it. I hope y'all have a great week of struggling well.